Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, we're going to take a look around the AFC East. Who did well in the draft, and has the balance of power changed in the Bills division? We'll talk with Eric Allen of NewYorkJets.com coming up at 8:30. At 7:30, we'll talk with Buffalo's third-round draft pick, Preston Brown, the linebacker from Louisville, plus your phone calls all night long.
This is pandemonium!
Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Good Friday evening to you. Welcome to the show. We're on the air live from One Bills Drive with no technical difficulties tonight. I apologize again for last night. We got caught up in the wide-ranging stadium renovations here in One Bills Drive with an electrical problem that shut us down for most of the first hour of the show. We did finally get on the air. We'll make up for it tonight. We'll have a show that's 1.5 times as good as last night's show. And we want you to be a part of it as well. Give us a call and let us know what's on your mind about the Bills or the NFL on this Friday night, the week after the draft. 803-0550 is the number to call. If you're outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Whatever's on your mind. We'd like to focus your attention this way, though, a week after the draft, to look around at the Bills' division rivals and compare what they did in the draft to what the Buffalo Bills did in the draft. Who did well in the NFL draft? At 8:30, we're going to talk with Eric Allen, who is a Jets insider for NewYorkJets.com. We'll talk about the Jets draft in particular. And as we move through next week, we'll get comments from a Patriots follower and from a Dolphins follower, and just sort of compare and contrast how these four teams play each other twice a year, how these four teams have fared against each other. But let's hear from you tonight about the AFC East and who did well in the draft. Who fell behind a little bit in the draft? 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We assume you're familiar with the Buffalo Bills draft. You know what the Bills did, and you know that the focus of the Bills draft really was the big move up in the first round. We've talked about that a lot. The trade up to the fourth overall to get Sammy Watkins, the trade with the Cleveland Browns, but surrendering next year's first rounder. We talked about that a lot last night, what that meant, the steep price that was. Because of that trade, many draft experts give the Bills poor to middling grades when it comes to the draft, whatever these grades mean. ESPN's Mel Kiper, C-. CBS Sports, Pete Prisco, a C. Yahoo Sports, a C. Rob Rang from NFL Draft Scout, a C. And most of those picks have to do with the move up to get the Sammy Watkins pick. Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com, quote, "The price to get Watkins drives the grade down." Mel Kiper, you heard him earlier this week on our show. He said, "This draft is loaded with wide receivers. There are good ones already signing as undrafted free agents, and as I type this, in fact, and the Bills paid a significant price to get Watkins." They sure did. They sure paid a steep price to get Sammy Watkins. We talked last night about how that compared to the price that the Redskins paid to move up a couple of spots to be in position to draft RG3 a couple of years ago, and going all the way back to 1987, how it pales in comparison to the Cornelius Bennett trade. But it was a significant price. Does that pull down the Bills' draft grade to a C? Or a little bit less than a C? And what about the rest of the AFC East? What do you think of their drafts? The New York Jets, we'll talk about them with Rob Rang a little bit later on, Eric Allen a little bit later on. But the grades that they got from most observers, a little bit higher than the Bills, a B. Calvin Pryor, a lot of people like the safety they chose, Calvin Pryor, and they get high marks for that. They took a tight end, Texas Tech's Jason Morrow. I guess, you know, they need a target. They need weapons of all kinds, you would think. And the Jets did that by taking Jason Morrow. I don't know if they really significantly improved themselves that much. Taj Boyd down in the sixth round, the quarterback from Clemson. There's nothing special about the Jets draft as far as I can determine.
No, and they had a ton of them. They had 12 picks.
12 picks.
So they, you know, if you're looking at it and what they were able to get, you know, if you're looking from the outside, okay, yeah, they had a good draft. They had 12 picks, 4 6-round picks. I don't know.
I don't know.
Look at it out. If you take the, you know, even 4 6-round picks, that's late in the draft. You know, that doesn't do you too much.
Yeah. The Dolphins draft. Offensive line, they had a crying need for offensive lineman. Juwan James, their first rounder at 19 overall out of Tennessee. Jarvis Landry, pretty good LSU wide receiver, the second best LSU wide receiver in the second round. The Dolphins with 8 draft picks. They got an interesting tight end, Arthur Lynch from Georgia. We saw him down at the Senior Bowl, but not a game breaker by any stretch of the imagination. And yet some people give him high marks. Peter Schrager from Fox Sports gives them an A-. I don't know. I don't see it with the Dolphins. 8 picks. They had a need at the offensive tackle. They did not get one of the premier offensive tackles at 19, but they got Juwan James. And Jarvis Landry is an interesting wide receiver. As I said, second best wide receiver. And the Patriots, finally. Observers give them about a C grade for their draft picks. And the Patriots, I don't know that they made a big splash in the draft. I think, you know, they almost outthink themselves, I think, from time to time, the New England Patriots in the draft. You know, the first-round pick, a lot of people like Dominic Easley, the defensive end from Florida. They got him deep in the first round. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, one of my all-time favorites in the last few years, but is he the successor to Tom Brady? That remains to be seen. Product of Eastern Illinois. He hasn't faced a lot of great competition. I like Garoppolo a lot. Certainly he has time to be groomed there, but that I don't think that's a pick that makes or breaks a draft. And other than that, what do they get? Nothing really. Brian Stork, center from FSU, running back from Wisconsin, James White. And yet the Patriots get B grades from many observers. But the Bills, because of their risky move, the Bills think that many observers, outside observers, think the Bills risk too much and give them a low grade. What do you think? Who got better by the draft this year in the AFC East? Who got worse? I guess you wouldn't get worse in the draft, but who failed to move the meter at all in the draft in the AFC East? I think, from my perspective, Buffalo Bills perspective, the Bills made the biggest meter moving move by moving up to get Sammy Watkins, a type of player who changes a team. Does Dominic Easley, the defensive end from Florida, dramatically change the New England Patriots? I don't know that he does. Does Calvin Pryor, the defensive back from Louisville, the safety from Louisville who went to the Jets, does he change things significantly for the Jets? I don't think he does. Does Juwan James, a rookie tackle, plugged into the Miami offensive line, change things for them? I don't think he does. But let us know what you think. Who made a difference in the draft this year in the AFC East? Who made the biggest move in the draft? And does it change your perception of how the division might go? It's been this way for a while. Patriots on top. Everybody else fighting for table scraps. The Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets. And the Bills, although they made some progress in the division this year, we were talking about this in the office the other day. If you think about it, because of their schedule, which is not easy, the Bills, if they're going to make a playoff run, are probably going to have to win at least 4 division games this year. 4-2. That's not easy to do. Not easy at all. You'd have to at least get to 4-2, you would think, for the Bills to make a legitimate playoff run, and maybe get to 5-1. 4-2, I mean, you think that includes sweeps over the Jets and the Dolphins. 5 wins means sweeps over those two and a split the series with New England. That's a lot to ask. Hasn't been done a lot in recent history for the Buffalo Bills. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The Bills in the draft, their opponents in the AFC East in the draft. Who did the best? Who did the worst? And does it move the meter at all when it comes to the AFC East? Does the draft change your perception of the AFC East and how this division might go? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We've also already had a couple of tweet responses to this question about who did well and who changes the complexion of the AFC East. Pumpkin Eater tweets in, I think we were more for who was the best available between round 2 and 7 and just got real aggressive in the first round. But overall, we had the better draft. I think so. I mean, I think if you look at who got the best player, I think there's very little doubt the Bills, out of all the AFC East division teams, got the best player available in the draft. I think if you look at who, as I said a minute ago, who has a potential to make the biggest difference, I think the Bills got the biggest difference-making player in the draft by virtue of their selection of Sammy Watkins. You may feel differently. We're going to talk with Aaron Allen about this at 8:30, when he joins us on the line to talk about the Jets draft. But who moved the meter in the AFC East by virtue of the draft the other day? 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Last year, as you know, the Bills finished, 3-3 in the AFC East. They were swept by the Patriots. They beat the Jets. They split with the Jets and beat the Dolphins twice, 3-3 in the division. And as I said, it's going to have to be 4-2 or better to make a playoff run, I think, this year when you look at the rest of the schedule for the Bills. Randy in Buffalo joins us. Hi, Randy. You're on the air.
Hey, John. First-time caller. Love your show.
Thanks, Randy.
I kind of wanted to talk about, everyone's all up in arms about us giving away our first-round draft pick next year. And kind of the way I see it is, everyone's kind of up in the air about E.J. Manuel and if he's going to be good, if he's going to be a flop this year. And I feel that if, God forbid, he flops, we're not going to be looking right in the draft as far as a quarterback. We're going to want a veteran QB, and I think that the draft pick doesn't really affect us in that manner. I mean, what do you think about that? We're in this point to win in the next 3 years. I think we have a team that, you know, make it to the playoffs in the next 3 years. We're not going to want a rookie quarterback. We're going to want someone who's a veteran.
You know, Randy,
I wanted your thoughts on that.
That's a really good point. I've never thought about that. A lot of people have made the observation that by using next year's first to move up to get Sammy Watkins, if things don't work out with EJ, the Bills won't be in a position to draft the franchise quarterback next year. I haven't really thought it through like you have. You're right. You probably wouldn't want a rookie developmental quarterback with the talent that's around the quarterback position on this team. You probably wouldn't want someone who's already won a little bit, which means you're probably going to have to look at free agency. Good quarterbacks don't move around a lot in free agency. So it'd be tough to think about that. Now you're talking about trade, I guess, which means, you know, you don't have a lot of draft assets to trade, and you don't want to start removing the assets that you've built around E.J. Manuel on offense or defense, for that matter, to trade for a quarterback. So it's going to be very difficult to acquire the kind of quarterback you talk about. But you're right about that, Randy. With the talent around the quarterback spot here on the defensive side of the ball, and even this year, the addition of Brandon Spikes and, you know, Kiko back for a second year, the good young talent in the secondary, the outstanding play, three Pro Bowl players up front on the defensive line. With that talent and what they've done to try to get better around the quarterback spot, Sammy Watkins, the strong running game, some additions on the offensive line, it's hard to imagine them being patient enough to wait to develop a rookie quarterback. Again, Andrew Luck doesn't happen very often, like maybe once every 10 years. RG3, maybe a flash in the pan, had a tremendous rookie year. But rookie quarterbacks coming in, winning right away. Russell Wilson, that's an example of a rookie who was surrounded by a strong running game and a good defense, and they had success there. Maybe you can hope for that. But you're right. And I also think this goes to your point, I believe, and I believe this 100%. If EJ flops, which I don't think he will, but if he does, all bets are off as far as who's running the team, who's making the calls, because they're all in with EJ. They've said that for 4 months now. And so, they've got an awful lot invested in E.J. Manuel. They pushed all the chips into the center of the table on E.J. Manuel. And I think that is going to be the story of the upcoming season. Good point, Randy. Thanks for your call. Phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Talking a little bit about the AFC East and how the Bills stack up against their AFC East brethren. Now, after the draft, who had the best draft? Who did the most to improve themselves? Did anybody get an impact player in the draft? I believe the Bills did with Sammy Watkins compared to the other three in the AFC East. You may feel differently. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Let's go to Frank in Gettysville. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, John. You know, I do like what the Bills did because, you know what, I see on the offense we got four guys who could break it for a touchdown any time of the game, and that's Goodwin, Watkins, Williams, and there's one more. Oh, Spiller.
Yeah.
Those four guys, I believe, can go all the way any time in the game. And then, you know, I think we have to remember that all the young guys that we had a good year last year. They're all going to be a year better. And I really like what they did. And I think the most important guy, actually, right now for the Bills is the offensive coordinator.
Tell me why. Why do you think that, Frank?
Because, you know, last year, I didn't like the hiring of, what's his name? I forgot, actually.
Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah, I thought Hackett had an off year. I mean, and I think, you know, you got to contribute that to him having, you know, the first year that he was on the job. But I think this year, if he doesn't get Spiller back to his old form and get Manuel going again, I think I would like a change if that doesn't happen this year.
All right, well, let's see what happens. I know that that's top priority to get, first of all, to make sure that C.J. Spiller is healthy. That was his main issue last year, health and the high ankle sprain that limited him all year long. There's not a whole lot that Nathaniel Hackett or the coaches can do about that. C.J. needs to be healthy. E.J. needs to be healthy. The quarterback needs to stay healthy, but he needs to get better. They have added a quarterback coach this year, as you know. They have added another offensive assistant, a senior offensive assistant, who should help along the way. And I think just by virtue of the fact that it's second year as a play caller in the NFL, second year as a coordinator in the NFL, Nathaniel Hackett will have a better handle on what they can do and what they want to do offensively. But, yeah, you know, your point is not a bad one. They need to get better on offense. Let's go to Kevin in Hamilton, Ontario. Hi, Kevin. Welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, John. Glad first time calling in. It's very interesting. I'm glad to hear you listen on the radio here.
Thanks.
I think I just like what they've done. When you think of EJ's your guy, and you build up the heft of your line, and you've got you know, you feature CJ or any. That's you know, got almost three front line runners. And then as soon as you start lining up guys in the box to defend that, then all of a sudden you got Woods and you got your new rookie, and that's looking good. So I think that's a good setup. And then they've already got a improving defense. I just like to see it play out. I think people are kind of nervous about, oh, no, what if it goes wrong? We got to see how it goes.
Exactly, yeah. You know, that one way to look at it, I guess, is, oh, what if this goes wrong? Where are we then? And that's not really, you know, I don't think the best way to look at it. What if it goes right? What if Manuel in his second year has total command of the offense, the up-tempo offense? What if EJ, after a pretty dedicated offseason, this past offseason of working on his own, I mean, we talked to his quarterback coach, his offseason quarterback coach a couple of weeks ago. Name escapes me, the guy out west at the, what was his name, Jay? Do you remember him? We can look it up. Yeah, we'll look it up.
We'll look it up.
The guy he worked with in California.
Can't even remember his name.
Yeah, but I just saw an article. Somebody else interviewed him. Somebody at a website interviewed him about EJ's offseason. But you'd have to think that'll have to help a little bit with EJ Manuel. You'd have to think his second year in the offense, the rest that EJ got before the season, which he did not have last year, going through the draft process and the combine process and the All-Star game process, you know, that I think would make a difference. But it is on him to be better this year, and I think they have weapons around him now that they did not have a year ago, in particular Sammy Watkins and maybe, as you said, a healthy C.J. Spiller. We're talking about the Bills and their place in the AFC East after the draft. Who do you think did the best job in the draft in these four AFC East division teams? Who got the impact player? Is Calvin Pryor the Jets an impact guy? I don't know. Is Juwan James, a tackle from Tennessee, Miami's first-round pick, is he an impact-style player? I don't know. Doesn't sound like it. Is Dominique Easley, defensive end from Florida, is he a difference-making type of player? Maybe of those three he is. What about Sammy Watkins? I think he is a difference-maker, even as a rookie. Sammy Watkins has the potential to make a difference in the division. 3-3 in the AFC East last year. The Bills are going to have to win four or maybe five games to be serious playoff contenders in the upcoming season. But what do you think? Who did the best job in the AFC East in the draft? As we are a week away from the draft, a week following the draft, and moving forward, who got the best player, who got the most impactful player in the draft among the AFC East teams? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show if you'd like to go that way as well. Graham Sykes tweets in, changing of the guard, AFC East champs. I don't know. Bills for Life tweets in about Eric Allen. Find out the latest on their defense coordinator problems. I don't know. James Payton tweets in, Bills made the most progress this offseason within the draft, also in free agency, and the upgrade in the coaching staff. They had a significant change on the defensive side of the coaching staff, that's for sure. You could argue the Bills have been, well, the Jets are pretty active in free agency this year, I guess. You know, when you talk about Eric Decker and Michael Vick, the Jets have made some changes. We're talking about the draft in particular tonight. Let's go to Butch on the east side. Hello, Butch. You're on the air.
How you doing, John? Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
John, I really think that we really came out on top. The reason being is before the draft, when we got Keith Rivers, a linebacker, you know, and some other little players, knick-knack players. We got, like, the wide receiver from the Giants. I like Ramsey. But at the exact same time, when you look at what we got in the draft with three offensive linemen, I really believe, people might disagree, I really believe in along with these three offensive linemen, along with Eric Woods and Cordy Glenn, is going to be the foundation for that offensive line, as far as solidifying ground and pound. With the running backs we got, the big backs, Flowers and Kiffin Dixon from San Francisco, and also we got Brown from Philadelphia, along with C.J. Freddie and the rest of the guys. I really believe that we're going to be a ground and pound offense that's going to take the pressure off E.J. Manuel, along with Sammy Watkins. But at the exact same time, at the end of the day, John, when it's all said and done, I think we're going to grade out better than the rest of them.
All right, thanks, Butch. You know, it strikes me when I listen to Butch's comments about down at the end of the draft. We've been focused on first-rounders in this discussion the last 20 minutes or so. I think the Bills had the most interesting draft of the AFC East. When you talk about guys like Kwanjo, with the question marks about him, about his knee injury, and the fact that he was regarded on many draft boards as a potential number one offensive line prospect. When you talk about guys like Cyril Richardson, that the Bills got way down deep in the draft. Calvin Fisher sat in here, the Bills college scout, and said if Cyril Richardson doesn't go through what he went through, he'd be a second-round pick. Chantrell Henderson down in the seventh round. Question mark? Iffy? Absolutely. Absolutely questions about him. But there he is in the seventh round, again, a potential first, second-round talent. I think the Bills had the most interesting draft of the AFC East Division teams. By the way, speaking of Kwanjo, an excellent video story off the field by Alexandra Vitale. It's up on our website, buffalobills.com. A one-on-one interview she did the other day with Cyrus Kwanjo. You want to take a look at that. Back to the phone. Sean, who's on the throughway. Sean, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John. First of all, I love your show.
Thank you.
Excellent job. But I just wanted to touch. Watkins is a huge, huge, huge pickup for us. And as far as EJ, everybody keeps talking about, you know, EJ's not going to make it. It was his first year. Plus, our receivers had to adapt with four different quarterbacks. I think EJ's definitely our guy. I think this is our second year. This is going to be make it or break it, but I think it's going to be make it.
Yeah, you know what we should do? I don't want to do it tonight. I agree with you for the most part, Sean. One of these nights we should get people talking. And we were talking about this, and this is why I like working here with the guys I work with back in digital media, because we dream up scenarios like this. What would constitute a good year for E.J. Manuel, and what would you look at? I came up with quarterback rating, which I know is a flawed metric, but I came up with this. If E.J.'s quarterback rating is 88 to 90 in that range, that's what we're looking for from E.J. Manuel. What do you think, Sean?
Absolutely.
Because that means he's completing a high percentage of passes. He's not turning it over a lot. He's got a decent yards per pass attempt, which is a critical stat in quarterback rating. I mean, to me, that measures the whole package. We're not looking for E.J. Manuel to go all Dan Marino, Peyton Manning on us here, are we, Sean? We're looking for competence, right?
Well, that's just it. I think everybody wanted us to draft this quarterback, and that's it. We have a Peyton Manning. But even Peyton Manning took time to become Peyton Manning.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. Peyton Manning's a Hall of Famer. I don't know that E.J. Manuel's a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's there's a reason why it's a Hall of Fame. It's hard to be that good. But we're going to do this show, and now I've already spoiled it, haven't I, Jay? I think there's a show there, Jay, a show topic. What constitutes a successful second year for E.J. Manuel? What are you looking at? Number of wins, quarterback rating, completion percentage? What is it?
At this point, I think just to stay healthy.
Don't answer now. Don't answer now.
Oh.
Save it for the show. We're going to do that.
All right.
We're going to do
we'll
that show.
We'll post-date it.
Next,
we'll tease it.
Yeah, next week we'll do that topic. Call here from Justin in Pittsford, New York. Going to be in Pittsford, Justin, in about 2 months. Can you believe that?
Oh, yeah. I wish I could be there, but I'm moving to Mississippi. I'm going to miss training camp this year.
Oh, goodness. Where are you going to Mississippi? Where are you going?
I'm going to Oxford. Going to attend Ole Miss.
Oh, there. I've been there. Beautiful down there. You've seen it already, right?
No, I've never been.
Oh, it's great. It's the quintessential southern college town, a beautiful courthouse right in the village square. William Faulkner's house is right there. You can go visit that. I love Oxford, Mississippi. Good for you. Congratulations.
But, yeah, I just wanted to talk about EJ a little bit. And I'm not going to answer with the second-year expectation question that you just proposed. But I look back on last year, two plays, the New England game with the first down that we missed and the Falcons game. Without the fumbles, we're not talking about if EJ's a guy, if he can handle it. those two plays change the season entirely. But what I wanted to get your ideas on, Kenny Guyton. Mm-hmm. I have a roommate from Ohio State. Think he's a pretty good quarterback. You think he's got a chance of making the roster?
He's coming in. I was just going to get to that, the rookies who've been invited. Kenny Guyton's coming in with three others on a tryout basis this weekend. Essentially, and we should have mentioned this already, the rookie camp starts tomorrow, 2:30. We'll be here. I'll be here, as a matter of fact, tomorrow, and have reports up on BuffaloBills.com. But essentially, they sign four players today, and they need bodies, obviously, to run this rookie minicamp. Kenny Guyton is one of them, a quarterback from Ohio State, 6'3", 208 pounds. He played a little bit last year. And has he got a chance? Yeah, he's got a chance. He's got to play well. He's got a chance, I think. He appeared in 22 games at Ohio State. Last year played in 8 games, completed 69% of his passes, 14 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and ran for 5 touchdowns last season. He had some good games against San Diego State, at Cal, and against Florida A&M. He's not going to replace E.J. Manuel. I'm pretty sure he's not going to replace Thad Lewis, so he's here, and if he has a good showing and if they sign him to the roster, he might have a chance to be the number three. Kenny Guyton is going to be here this weekend, along with three other players, including wide receiver Fred Lee from the University at Buffalo, 6'2", 205-pounder. He's in here on a tryout basis over the weekend. They're bringing in a wide receiver, Caleb Holly, from East Central College in Oklahoma, and another wide receiver, Ivan McCartney, of West Virginia, 6'2", 183-pounders. That's the four tryouts who are coming in. Bills have about 30 players. They're draft picks. They're undrafted rookie free agents. A couple of the first-year players who are going to be at the rookie camp, including Randy Colling, the offensive lineman from Arcade, New York, Jake Dombrowski, who was signed a first-year player, the punter, vying for a backup punting spot. I'm looking down the list. You know most of these names from the other day when they were signed as rookie free agents, undrafted free agents. Cordell Roberson, a first-year player, a wide receiver, will be in the group. And Chris Summers, a first-year player, wide receiver. Nathan Williams, first-year linebacker. 30 players on the field, 2:30 tomorrow, 2:30 Sunday, and then again on Monday morning for the Bills rookie camp, and it all starts tomorrow. One other bit of Bills news today, wide receiver Brandon Kaufman released by the Bills today. We had him on the show just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, just before I think the voluntary offseason conditioning program began, and he talked about his excitement about being told to get ready to play tight end. He was an undrafted free agent, had a good preseason for the Bills last year, then was released, came back on the practice squad December 10th last year, product of Eastern Washington, the big, tall wide receiver, Brandon Kaufman, released by the Buffalo Bills today. I exchanged some text messages with him this afternoon. We wish him well. I think he's a talented player, and hope he finds a spot somewhere in the league. All right, we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk with the Buffalo Bills' third-round draft pick, Preston Brown, the linebacker from Louisville. He'll be in studio with us when we return. It is the John Murphy Show. We're presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, One Bills Drive, and the halls are crawling with rookies this week. They are here, including the draft picks, including the guy who's in the studio with us right now, the Bills' third-round pick, the linebacker from the University of Louisville, Preston Brown, in studio with us. Preston, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How's it feel the first day or two here with the Buffalo Bills? What's it like for you, pro football?
Yeah, it feels good. I mean, it's truly a blessing to be in the NFL and the Bills organization, so it was a great feeling.
You were selected in the third round on Friday night. Is that about where you thought you might go when you went into the draft this year?
Yeah, that's what I've been telling myself and my family throughout the whole process. I'll probably go around the third round.
And did you have any preference where you wanted to go? When the Bills pulled your name, were you okay with that?
Oh, yeah, I was excited. I was running around the house, jumping up and down, ready to get to Buffalo.
You grew up in Cincinnati. Were you a Bengals fan growing up?
Yes, I was.
What are your impressions of the Buffalo Bills before you got here? What did you think of this franchise or this team?
Mm-hmm. Only thing I really knew growing up was about the four consecutive Super Bowls. That was the biggest thing that I really knew about them, just seeing on NFL Network and things.
Yeah, it's a part of NFL history, isn't mm-hmm. it, the Buffalo Bills? And the Bengals played into some of that, too. The Bills beat the Bengals in some of those championship games. You had a standout high school football career in Northwest High School in Cincinnati, and some people were surprised that the almost hometown Buckeyes didn't make a run at you. Were you looking to go to Ohio State when you got out of high school?
Never did. I mean, they asked me to come to a camp, but that was about it. I never really been a fan of Ohio State.
I was
a fan of Miami, Florida growing up, and that national championship game with the pass interference and all that. Yeah. I never liked them ever since.
Yeah. Okay. What about you initially committed to your hometown team, University of Cincinnati?
Yeah.
And tell me about that and then the decision to leave there and go to Louisville.
I committed my sophomore year under Brian Kelly. He left and went to Notre Dame, so then Brian Kelly came in, but then Coach Strong called me from down at Louisville, and I took a visit and just fell in love down there.
What did you like about Louisville?
Just the family atmosphere down there. It was a really great. I love the coaches. They were all father figures to me, and just city and all was just a great place.
Coach Strong has built a great program down there, didn't he? And really almost revitalized the Louisville football program that had hit hard times for a couple of years.
Yeah.
What was that like to be part of that, to be part of building a big-time program down there at Louisville?
Oh, well, it was great. I mean, coming in, we were having losing season after losing season, but Coach Strong turned it around. We got some good players on the team. Saw four guys got drafted this year from Louisville, so we just had some great players, and he just developed us the right way.
This is in your resume. When you were in the starting lineup for the Louisville Cardinals, 30 wins, 4 losses, right? Is that mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that. I mean, you have to feel like you coming out of a program that knows what winning is all about coming mm-hmm. here to the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I'm just trying to bring the aspect of any way I can help the team win. If it's on special teams, on defense, no matter what I can do, I'll go out there and play fullback if I need to. I'm just out there to help the team win.
How much special teams did you play at Louisville, and what did you like about special teams?
I played special teams all 4 years, and that's really how I got my start, because I started my first game as a freshman against Kentucky, but after that I was really on special teams in and out, so that was where I got my start. So I love special teams, and I hopefully continue to do it.
How many it says you appeared in 13 games as a freshman. How many starts did you get as a freshman?
I only had that first game versus Kentucky.
What happened?
Well, actually, my first play was a touchdown. I remember the play. It was Phil Cowboy. The guy ran right past me and scored like a 37-yard
Ouch.
Touchdown. So I was out after that.
What did they say? What did the coaches say?
Oh, they were honestly, it was too many cuss words and other things. But, I mean.
You were a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, I really didn't know anything. That's why I'm coming in the NFL really trying to learn before I get out there and mess around.
And you obviously recovered well from that. And mm-hmm. by the time you were a sophomore, your second year, 2011, you were a second team all conference. So, obviously, you learned from that and probably other experiences you had in your mm-hmm. first year there, right?
Yeah, it was the coaches really helped me get along through the program. They really developed us. There was a couple of players, Marcus Smith as well, who he came in as a quarterback. So they really developed as well throughout those 4 years.
We're with Preston Brown, the linebacker, the Bills' third-round pick out of Louisville. You started at outside linebacker in your second year, and when did they move you inside to the middle linebacker spot?
Well, we had a middle linebacker senior, so I played outside Sam, and then through the middle of the year I switched to Will. So once he graduated, my junior year, I went to Mike and played that ever since.
And do you feel like that's your natural position to be inside to play the Mike linebacker?
I mean, I feel I can do both as well. I mean, I have no problem playing on the outside. I think it's fun being out there in space on number two or actually getting some sacks off the edge, so that's always a good part. But I feel probably more suitable in the middle.
And why is that? What do you like about playing in the middle? There's a lot more traffic in the mm-hmm. middle, isn't there?
Yeah, I just like being a quarterback of the defense. That's the best thing, having command the whole defense, checking the plays, being a quarterback. I just enjoy that.
What about stopping the run? I mean, mm-hmm. as the Mike guy, as a middle linebacker, that's your primary duty, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And that's something I took pride in throughout my whole career. Last year, I think we ended up number one in run defense and number one defense overall. So that's one thing we really took into account. It was really just a race to the ball every play.
How much have the Buffalo Bills talked to you about that? Because this is a team that's had trouble stopping mm-hmm. the run in recent years.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's why they have Brandon Spikes here. So I'm here to learn from him. He's another Coach Strong guy, so hopefully I get some questions answered from him on how he handled his 4 years in the NFL.
Have you met Brandon yet?
Yeah, I met him downstairs in all the meeting rooms and things.
It's almost like he could be your mentor, at least getting started here, right?
Mm-hmm, I hope so. I hope I'm following everything he shows me right now.
It's kind of a character.
Mm-hmm, yeah, he is.
He's kind of a crazy guy. I like the way your career at Louisville ended in the regular season. You played at Cincinnati, and it seems like you played maybe the best game of your whole college career in your hometown at Cincinnati. What did that feel like?
Anytime I got to go back to Cincinnati, it was always a great time. So I just try to put my best effort out there every game. But when that Cincinnati games come around, it's that always that check on your schedule. So it was fun to go out there my last game.
Did you have a lot of friends and family when you played games at Cincinnati?
Oh, yeah. It was always a big crowd there. And I ended up winning the last two games. So it was a good experience every time I got to go home.
Well, Preston, you've been here now a day or two with the Buffalo Bills. What's the typical day like for you guys, you rookies here in the Bills complex?
Wake up for the bus ride around 6 and probably get back at the – back in our little apartment around 5 probably, but throughout the day we're just meeting and working out and physicals and pulling and prodding on everything. So it's just been a good couple of days so far.
And it's the meetings, you meet not with the other rookies, you meet with the whole linebacker group? Is that how it works?
Linebacker and the defense, the whole defense.
And the good thing, I guess, from this standpoint would be that it's a new defense. So you're all, you and the veterans are starting from square one, I would think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, we're not that far off. That's the best thing about it. So, I mean, we're kind of pulling in the things that we're learning with them, and then we'll go back with coach and learn the basics.
Is it a complex defense, Preston?
It can be, but, I mean, I'm sure I'll get it. I'll grasp it because we had a pretty complex defense back at Louisville with Coach Strong, so I'm sure I'll be fine.
And what have you been able to do besides meeting so far this week? I know you'll be on the field Saturday, Sunday, Monday, but do you guys get to run around, work out, do anything at all physically while you're here this week?
We work out tomorrow. We got the team run and a lift tomorrow, so we'll start exercising tomorrow.
And they probably have testing maybe for you to do, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we already did some the FMS screening tests and all types of things today and physicals.
Did you have a feeling, Preston, that the Buffalo Bills might select you in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, when I saw them move up in the first round, I thought they might get me, but instead they took Sammy, so I settled for the third round.
Were you serious?
No, I'm just messing around.
No, you can be confident like that.
But I had a feeling. It was my first visit, and it really was my best visit, so I had a feeling in the back of my mind that it really could end up being Buffalo.
What did you like about the visit? Why was it your best?
When I came here, it just really felt like I was already a part of the team. It was a really family environment with the coaches. And because Coach, he came from Syracuse, a college kind of guy, so I kind of had that same kind of feeling.
During those meetings, I was thinking about, I wondered what kind of impression the Bills might be making. I mean, the parking lot's all torn up. There's construction outside. There's construction workers walking around with hard hats on. And by the way, we just had a brutal winter. I mean, we had winter that lasted until like 3 weeks ago. None of that fazed you? That didn't bother you when you were on your visit here?
Oh, no. Me personally, I love the snow. I hate being hot. So when I heard Buffalo, I was like, that's fine with me because I hate sweating all day. So that was good. But when I came here, it was really probably more construction workers than it was coaches in the building.
Yeah.
But they showed me the new blueprints and everything. So it's going to be pretty nice when it's all finished up.
In a sense, maybe you went through this at Louisville too. You get a chance to be in on the ground floor of building something pretty good here with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I hope so.
Preston, thank you very much for coming by. We appreciate you. Good luck to you this week and going forward. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Preston Brown, middle linebacker for the Buffalo Bills in studio with us. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks to linebacker Preston Brown. Good talking with him. He's got a certain amount of energy, enthusiasm that is kind of contagious. Looking forward to seeing him on the field tomorrow. Preston Brown and the rest of the rookies. The Bills rookie minicamp starts tomorrow, runs through Monday. You can get all the updates, including video updates, tomorrow afternoon at BuffaloBills.com. We'll have a video story up for you in probably 4 or 5 tomorrow afternoon. The practice goes 2:30 until probably, I would think, around 4 o'clock. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. If you're interested in the Bills or Bills news, one great way to keep in touch is the new Buffalo Bills Touch app for your iPad, Windows, or Android tablet. The Bills draft review is in there with stories about all of these draft picks. All kinds of great interactivity is available there. There's also a stadium renovation guide with an interactive video virtual tour, behind-the-scenes video, and photo galleries that are updated regularly and much more. Download Buffalo Bills Touch for free in the Apple iTunes Store, in the Windows App Store, and at the Google Play Store, and tap into this essential tool, Bills Touch. It's an app for iPad, Windows, or Android tablet that brings you closer to the team than ever before. All right, NFL news today. Robert Mathis, a linebacker from the Indianapolis Colts, has been suspended 4 games for violating the league's policy on performance-enhancing substitutes. He'll be able to return to the active roster on Monday, September 29th. Robert Mathis suspended by the league, a 4-game suspension reportedly for performance-enhancing substances. We had a lot of questions pre-draft, a lot of comments about a tight end from University of Oregon, Colt Lierla, who did not get drafted, and now he's going to get a shot with the Green Bay Packers. The Packers have decided to bring him in at the for their rookie camp this week. He was suspended by the University of Oregon last fall, left the team in what was described as a mutual parting, then got into legal problems. He was invited to the Packers rookie orientation camp on a tryout basis. He was undrafted, unsigned, and rookie free agent, so he's not signed, but he is in the Packers camp on a tryout basis. He was arrested for cocaine possession and attempting to free police last year, so he's had his troubles. A very talented athlete, Colt Lierla from the University of Oregon. We had questions about him pre-draft and even after the draft, and now he is going to a rookie tryout with the Green Bay Packers. Well, coming up next hour, we're going to talk about the Jets draft. Eric Allen from NewYorkJets.com, the Jets insider, will join us to talk about what we've been talking about through most of this first hour, the Bills draft, and how it compares to the rest of the AFC East. One more hour to go. Stick around. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like that kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
It is hour two. We are on the air until 9 o'clock tonight as we wrap up the week. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Coming up later on this hour, Eric Allen, who covers the New York Jets for NewYorkJets.com. He is the Jets insider. We'll talk with him about the Jets draft and compare it to the Buffalo Bills draft. Signings all over the league. As you know, some first-rounders, Khalil Mack, signed his contract yesterday. The Bills signed three rookie draft picks to contracts yesterday. And as the contracts get signed, the agents move to the forefront. Well, a couple of months ago, we had a chance to interview maybe the most famous football agent of all time. They call him the real-life Jerry Maguire, Super Agent Lee Steinberg. He had written a book that came out earlier this year. The book, The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. Lee Steinberg, the author. He had Bruce Smith. He had Rob Johnson. He had Troy Aikman, Ben Roethlisberger. A 40-year stretch. There was a stretch over 7 years where Steinberg represented the top NFL draft pick six times in 7 years. It was said that he was the inspiration for the title character in the movie, Jerry Maguire, and Steinberg was a consultant on the film. Super Agent Lee Steinberg, his book, The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. We had a chance to interview Lee Steinberg just a couple of months ago. I know you worked on the Jerry Maguire movie, and the publicity sheet says the real-life Jerry Maguire. And as I read the book, Lee, it occurred to me, your story is better than the story in Jerry Maguire. Somebody should make a movie out of your story. It's better than Jerry Maguire.
Well, they may. Actually, there would be more interested in that. But I'm not a former agent anymore. I'm a current agent because I'm certified to represent players in basketball and football, and we're ramping up to go out and represent players again and do marketing and do content supply, which is how our business has morphed. So it's sports-themed motion pictures, television, video games, any app that can enhance fan experience, and trying to advise those businesses and maybe own a piece of them.
Yeah, I want to get to you about that, about your long journey to where you are now, Lee. One more thing about Jerry Maguire. I laughed out loud when the director of the movie, Jerry Maguire, Cameron Crowe, said about you, Jerry Maguire wants to be Lee Steinberg. It's pretty accurate.
Well, that's what Cameron used to tell me. And in the couple of years we spent together where he followed me everywhere, and I told him lots and lots of stories, it was clear that as much as he might have used of what I told him, I started with the very first pick in the first round of the NFL draft and got the biggest contract ever, and you had to have Jerry Maguire start not quite there.
Yeah. You know, reading the book, and it chronicles your life in your early days in Southern California, it seems like you were always around performers and entertainment people, and maybe you sort of fell in the sports agent business because of your friendship with Steve Bartkowski, huh?
Well, the truth of the matter was my grandpa ran the biggest country club in Los Angeles that was the hangout of all the different movie stars, comedians, and he had lunch every day with Groucho Marx and Jack Benny and George Burns, and I ended up sitting on Marilyn Monroe's lap. Not that I was at an age where I knew what to do about that, but and it was interesting. But my dad had two core values. One was to treasure relationships, especially family, and the second was to try to make a difference in the world. So there really was no sports law when I began back in 1975. And we had to improvise. It was 2 years into my career before there was actually a right of representation.
Wow. You know, you mentioned how there was no real sports law when you started. It's funny, Lee, and I thought about this when I read the book. My eldest son is a second-year law student who is taking sports law, and he told me the classroom is packed. It's one of the most popular classes at his law school.
If you go across the country to campuses, they have sports management programs. They have sports law programs. There are business programs. And when I was going to school, everyone wanted to be an entertainment lawyer. Today, they all want to be sports lawyers and sports agents. And actually, the field's broader than that because it's sports television, marketing, memorabilia. You can work for a team, a league, a club, college, for a union. So it's become this massive field, and it's mostly occasioned by television kicked it all off because when three networks went to 300, then all of a sudden there was exponentially more sports on TV and analysis shows and highlight shows and the rest of it ramped up the franchise values because so much more money went to individual teams. It had an effect on salaries. So it's a hot field today.
Lee Steinberg is our guest. His book is The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. You mentioned you had six number one overall picks in a seven-year period, quite a hot streak. Were you lucky or were you just that good, Lee?
Well, first of all, you have to be lucky in any of it. So you couldn't really pick six players that you knew were going to be the first pick in the draft. So hopefully part of it is guiding a player through the draft. You certainly can't play for him, but you can make sure that he does the scouting process the best possible, and he's ready for the All-Star games and the scouting combines and campus visits, and is in the best shape and is presented well to the pros. So having 60 first-round draft picks and the first pick in the first round eight times, the dynamics are different when you're at the top of the first round, and it's much more exciting.
One of those, of course, was the Bills' great Hall of Famer, Bruce Smith, and it seems from the book that you got pretty close with Bruce on a personal level.
I love Bruce. Now, Bruce never met a contract he liked. And
or a training camp, for that matter.
Yeah, for more than a thing, but... But I had wonderful days up in Orchard Park. The Ralph Wilson was sort of amazing, and we bonded over the fact that I was chairman of Save the Rams and tried to fight for franchises to stay. But he and I got real close. He used to send me chocolate-covered footballs and postcards from Europe. And part of what helped us get close was the fact I had Thurman Thomas, I had Bruce Smith, later Rob Johnson. And those were wonderful. Bruce and Thurman are both in the Hall of Fame. And that was an amazing run where they were among the two best teams in football for 4 years. But this is such a country of winners. You're among the two best teams out of 32, but you don't win the last game. And you're considered the worst.
In the book, Lee, you tell a pretty amazing story that Bills fans would appreciate about being in the locker room, the Buffalo Bills locker room, after they lost the famous Music City Miracle.
Oh, what an ugly game.
Yeah.
I left sitting in the press box, and I left, and in essence, they had won. I mean, this game was just going to run itself out. by the time I get down in the locker room, they lost. It was such a shock. And those players were just aghast and were still shell-shocked. I mean, they couldn't process that had happened. Of course, I was on the other side of it with the Bills when Warren Moon in Houston was just kicking all tar out of them. And then in the second half, they came back and won the playoff game. So there went Warren Moon's chance to be in the Super Bowl. So my job is to go into the losing locker room first, because those are the players that need you the most. And then to celebrate with the winners. Of course, the worst night ever was Dallas was playing San Francisco for the right to go to the Super Bowl in like 95. And so I've got Steve Young, and all the Niners are terribly upset. And then I get to go see Troy, but he's in the hospital having suffered a concussion, and he's got very little idea where he is.
You mentioned Rob Johnson was a client of yours. Rob played quarterback for the Bills in that Music City Miracle game, and the Bills and their fans invested a lot in Rob Johnson. Why do you think his career never worked out, Lee?
I think that remember whether he held the ball too long or whatever, but that's one of the two paths that you take to find a quarterback today. The first path is at the top of the first round, and the second is to take the best player. That's how Brett Favre, Tom Brady, a whole group of people, they either came in a lower round and replaced the guy in front, or they got traded. And sort of a puzzlement to me, but he's gone on in second career to do well, and it looks like the Bills have a great young quarterback now.
Book is The Agent by Lee Steinberg. He is on the line with us live right now. I was struck, Lee, by you had a pretty accurate description of your professional issues, and you talk about a lack of collegiality among agents. Can you expand on that, what you have in mind when you talk about that?
So it's like crabs in a barrel, and I assume that you're able to say, you know, this other person on radio is really good. I admire him. Best-selling authors will put blurbs on the back of both their competitors' books talking about how great they are. But in agency, it seems to be constitutionally capability to say the nicest thing about anyone else. And I didn't want my former wife to marry me because I convinced her that all of the men were villains and heinous, you know. So you might want to talk about yourself, but it's been a problem. I always thought that agents should work together, of course, Bill Polian was always against that. In 1985, we assembled a meeting of all the different agents, he started calling me king of the agents, and it never got any better after that.
We just had Polian on the show last hour, Lee, from the Combine. Did you have problems with Bill? I know, in fact, he said something to us when we talked to him at the Combine about agents, and he called them agents and their fellow travelers who are not looking out for the welfare of the game. I mean, he does have
and the truth of the matter is that I went 23 years with Warren Moon, introduced him to the Hall of Fame, went the whole careers with a number of different players, and stressed always role modeling and that they go back to the high school, collegiate, and professional communities and try to make a real difference by setting up programs. And that's led in second career to three of the players being owners of teams, to the Steve Youngs and Troy Aikmans having amazingly successful careers. Well, look, Bill's point of view is if you haven't played the game and you haven't coached the game, then you ought not to be involved in the game. And there's not much I can do about that. Now, in 1999, I had Edger and James there with Indianapolis, and I was sure that Bill had a date on his calendar. And now this will create controversy again. So it was a long time ago where he knew he wanted to have Edger and James in. So one day I take team James with his advisors up to meet with Bill Polian. I said, this is not a good idea. So we walked in, and Bill said, well, we have nothing to discuss because I made my final offer. And next thing I knew, security guards were walking us out of the complex. And so I flew all the way back to the Bay Area. And in the interim, one of my associates had figured out the contract with him, so I flew all the way back.
Wow. Lee Steinberg, our guest, his book is The Agent. Lee, I give you credit. In the book, you detail pretty much in depth kind of a stunning personal and professional collapse for you. Then it could not have been difficult for you to write that.
It
could not have been easy, I should say.
I had reverses in my personal life. My professional life was sort of charmed for years and years and years, but my father died of cancer. We had a home we lost, a mold. My kids had terrible vision problems, and then they got divorced. And I turned to the wrong thing to sort of ease the pain, which was alcohol, and spiraled down in 2007, 8, and 9. I get to March of 2010 and realize that I've got to make a change. So I gave the younger agents the practice. I went into sober living and vowed, if nothing else, I'll be sober and I will be a good father. So I worked a 12-step program and sort of threw myself into it. The reason I shared it is if anyone else is confused out there and hopeless, to try to give them a little hope. And next month, one day at a time, I will be 4 years continuously sober. And so life is back to being exciting again.
That's excellent. Congratulations to you on that. You're back in the business now, as you mentioned. How has the business changed during the short period that you were out? And what's the focus of your new company?
Well, first of all, the dramatic change is that football is now salary capped. So the rookie contracts, in good conscience, it's hard to tell someone you can make a whole lot of difference in them. And those players are under contract for 4 years, unless they're a first-rounder who's been renewed, where it's 5 years. So that's changed dramatically. The second thing is that agents in football are responsible for training their players. So this is the period, January to maybe mid-February, to get players ready for the combine, and that can cost $10,000 to $15,000 a player. So it really turns representation of rookies in for most rookies and most agents into a non-profitable business. And the NBA is salary capped also, so most agents today don't charge basketball players on their first contract because they're capped. So that's been a major change, and now we continue to see that sports theme, motion pictures, television, video games, new projects are springing up, and agents tend to be involved in that. The last trend is merger mania. So big groups have bought up a whole series of sports agencies, and they're really not interested in the fee as much from the players as much as they are in the marketing, in packaging players together and doing marketing for corporations, and in owning those types of properties I just talked about and getting equity in them. So that's been a major shift.
I know your new company is very much involved in technology of delivering the sports product by all the different platforms that are out there. Where do you see that going, and what are we looking at in the next 10 years as far as sports and technology?
So I sit on the board of something called DeathSite. So if you're living in Arizona, but you know what, you grew up in Buffalo, you missed the Bills, you can watch 30 hours of high def over your computer with all the highlights if you were living in Buffalo. And there are millions of that, which are all designed to enhance experience. And so I wrote an article for Sports Business Journal where I projected that you'd put a monitor in front front of each seat in the stadium for today's multitasking generation, and you would have fantasy stats rolling down one side. Down the other, the bets you made on games, down below, you could text and talk smack to someone in the stadium or out of the stadium. You could order off that deal where they bring you food from the snack bar. And then the fans would get to vote on one play call a game that the coach had to call, and then the fans would vote on one referee's call being overturned.
Wow.
So, and now you just start to program that. So this is where we're going, more and more different ways to use multiple platforms of content supply to bring fans closer to the game.
Last question, Lee. A lot of athletes and their agents pay lip service to the concept of giving back to the community and being good to charities. I got the sense that throughout your career, you've handled that as more than just lip service, more than just public relations.
Well, you know, John, I was hardwired from sitting around my table as a young person. And my father just kept stressing over and over and over again, make a difference in the world, make a difference in the world, help people who can't help themselves. So it's really how I judge myself. It's have I enhanced the lives of players by preparing them in all ways for a second career? And have we together created charitable and community programs that make a difference? So when I had the boxer Lennox Lewis cut a public service announcement that said real men don't hit women, he could do more to trigger behavioral change in rebellious adolescents than 1,000 authority figures ever could. So it's they've got extraordinary power, and used properly in high school scholarship funds, collegiate repayments, and these programs like Warwick Dunn, moving 131 single mothers into the first home they'll ever own in Homes for the Holidays, and then making the down payment and having Home Depot outfit it. So that's the type of thing a player can do, and that's what I hope my legacy is.
That's Super Agent Lee Steinberg, a conversation we had a couple of months ago. His book, The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game by Lee Steinberg. Pretty good book, and he covers a wide swath of recent pro football history and a pretty compelling personal story as well, the real-life Jerry Maguire. Lee Steinberg, the book, The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live tonight at One Bills Drive, and coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about the New York Jets draft. We've talked about the Bills draft a lot, but what about the rest of the AFC East? We can hear from you as well. The phone lines are open, 803-0550, the number, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. A little bit of NFL news tonight. Did you hear about Michael Sam, 7th-round draft pick by the Rams the other day, the first openly gay player to be drafted into the NFL? Apparently, he revealed late to the St. Louis Rams that he had already had a deal in place to tape a documentary, like a reality TV show on the network owned by Oprah Winfrey, owned the network. Well, now the word comes tonight that that show has been postponed. There will not be a show this year for Michael Sam. A documentary based on his NFL life, which would be interesting with his whole story. But you also wonder, especially if he hid it from the Rams, how happy they were about that. You'd like to know that, I would think. Before you use a 7th-round draft pick on Michael Sam, a distraction? I would think so, to a certain extent. For I think any 7th-round draft pick, their number one focus, if they really want to play in the league, would be to make the roster, not to make a documentary or make a reality TV show. So they're, for whatever reason, and there hasn't been a public statement on this, but Michael Sam reportedly has postponed his documentary, the reality show, that he essentially sprung on the St. Louis Rams after the fact, after he was drafted. Interesting. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about the New York Football Jets. Eric Allen, who is a team insider and a reporter, senior reporter for NewYorkJets.com, will be live on the line with us. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not so sure there'd be too many people who want to play us.
Rex Ryan, New York Jets coach, feeling pretty good about his football team. That's what he said just the other day at a New York City radio station. We talked about the Bills draft for the last week or so. Let's focus in on some of the other drafts from the AFC East, including the New York Jets. We are live on the line right now with the senior reporter and team insider for NewYorkJets.com, Eric Allen. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Murph, always great speaking with you, buddy.
Rex Ryan feeling pretty good about his team coming back. That should not be any surprise, right?
No, it's no surprise, and you guys know that in Buffalo, and the Bills fans know this. So Rex Ryan is a very confident person. He's confident in his own abilities, and he's always confident in his roster. And listen, last year the Jets finished up an uptick, winning 3 out of 4 to close the year, finishing 8-8. A lot of people thought they were going to be maybe like a 4 or 5 win team before the season started, and then they made some improvements in free agency and went in the draft with the NFL high 12 selections. And I think they did some good things, addressing depth and adding some speed and getting some more talent in there.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the draft, Eric, but it occurs to me that, like the Buffalo Bills, a lot of what the New York Jets might accomplish this year rides on the shoulders of a second-year quarterback. In the Jets' case, it's Geno Smith. Do you agree, or is Michael Vick looming in the background to take over?
I think you're exactly right as far as what is the key to the Jets' success this season is who's going to be a quarterback. I think the Jets made it clear when they did sign Michael Vick that, hey, listen, we're really happy with the way Geno Smith progressed at the end of last season. Michael Vick is brought in to push Geno and hopefully take the second-year quarterback to the next level. Even Vic Murph has said on a couple occasions now that Geno Smith is the starting quarterback of the New York Jets. I think they've improved at that position because last year they went into the season with Geno Smith, who never took an NFL snap before, and Mark Sanchez got hurt in the preseason. They had Matt Sims behind him last year, so the Jets went into the 2013 season with two guys on the top of their quarterback depth chart and never taken an NFL snap. Now you bring in a guy like Vic, who had success under Marty Morningweg. So I think that they're happy with the depth they have at the position, but I think the Jets are clearly sending the message out is, hey, listen, Geno Smith, he's going to be hard to beat up.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Rex Ryan say. Let's play that cut from his radio interview yesterday.
It's not just, hey, this is Geno Smith's job. I'm just telling you what I believe to be the truth, which is this young man's going to be hard to beat out. Even as a talented player as Mike Vick is, I think Geno Smith has made that big of strides. And, again, the proof will be in the pudding when we play this thing out. But, that's my confidence in him.
Rex Ryan talking about Geno Smith. Eric, what does Geno Smith have to do better this year? I mean, the 21 interceptions last year sort of jumps off the paper at you right away.
Murph, that's it. I mean, the Jets fans have seen this now the past 3 seasons. But Mark Sanchez, the 2 years prior, led the National Football League in turnovers with, I believe, 52. And Geno turned the ball over 25 times in all last year. He started protecting the ball better down the stretch. Like I said, he had only 2 interceptions over that last 4-game segment. And what you saw from him down the stretch, Murph, is he started seeing the field better. I think he was making decisions quicker, and he also, when he didn't have anything, he wasn't forcing things. He was picking up yards on the ground, and I think Vic actually can help him there as well because, you know, you're talking about in Vic, only quarterback in NFL history who's passed for 20,000 yards and rushed for 5,000 yards. So he's played in that Morningweg system, and he's made a lot of headway on the ground himself.
We're on the line with Eric Allen, senior reporter and team insider for NewYorkJets.com, talking about the Jets. And in the draft, Eric, 6th round, Taj Boyd, the Clemson quarterback, was chosen by the Jets, but he may not wind up playing quarterback. Is that what I hear now?
Well, Rex was asked about that today, Murph, after the Jets' first minicamp workout. The rookie minicamp started here at Florham Park today. And he said, listen, we're going ahead with him at quarterback, but he obviously has tremendous running ability, so he didn't rule that out in the future that he could be tried somewhere else. But, no, I think for the foreseeable future, Taj Boyd as a quarterback, and I think he's going to compete with Matt Sims for that number three position.
Let's start at the top of the Jets draft for a second here, Eric, and the selection of the defensive back, Calvin Pryor, with the 18th pick overall, pretty widely applauded as the right guy in the right place in this draft, huh?
Yeah, you know what? Huge hitter, Murph, and the Jets last year were juggling around at safety, and you guys know that after the bye, I believe that was Ed Reed's first game with the green and white, and he came on and played with the Jets the last seven games or so. But, you know, it was a position of need, even though it wasn't talked about too much heading into the draft, because the Jets' problems on offense have been well documented, as well as the cornerback position, because they released Antonio Cromartie before free agency started. So a lot of people thought, hey, either it's going to be a wide receiver or a cornerback. But they were delighted that Calvin Pryor was there, the safety from Louisville. Seven interceptions throughout his career with the Cardinal, but a monster hitter. And the word that struck me that Rex Ryan told me about this kid is he's an enforcer. He's going to force that middle of the field. And he also is very rangy and was a playmaker for Louisville. So he'll step in from day one, and he'll be patrolling back there for the Jets secondary.
Second round, a tight end, Jason Morrow out of Texas Tech. It sounds like he's pretty confident, and it sounds like, again, a pretty good fit for an offense that is in desperate need of some receiving weapons.
Well, you're right. Listen, the Jets averaged 18.1 points a game last year. That was 29th in the National Football League, and they still were able to win eight games and go 500 last year. But Amaro is going to add to that 31st-ranked passing offense, and what is the quarterback's best friend? You know that, is a tight end. And he really broke out at Texas Tech last year. Yeah, yes, they split him out wide a lot, 106 receptions, over 1,300 yards, but Murph, I interviewed him the other day. This guy's a monstrous dude. He's 6'5", 250-plus pounds, and, you know, you're going to have to pick your poison. You're going to put somebody small on him, and he'll use his height and box you out. But if you put somebody big on him, he can stretch the middle of that field. He can get downfield, and he's also a very good runner with the football after making the catch. I think before that second day, a lot of Jets fans would have thought that you had to move up in that second round to get maybe a Marquise Lee, the receiver out of USC, or a Morrow, but they stood right there while you know, they examined potential trades. But I think John Isaac might have thought the price was too high, but and they sat there, and Jason Morrow fell to them.
Huh. We've talked about three Jets draft picks, Boyd, Pryor, and Morrow. They have nine other draft picks. Among those nine, who do you think are the most significant, maybe the most impactful picks the Jets made?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start right there with the third round, Dexter McDougal from Maryland. A lot of people didn't talk about him before the draft, but I mentioned to you the cornerback position. The Jets are in a transition mode there. I mean, Dee Milner is, ready or not, here we come. He's the number one cornerback because the Jets did release Antonio Cromartie and Crow signed with the Arizona Cardinals. Was the number two position expected to be filled by Dimitri Patterson, the former Miami Dolphin. But the Jets were really high on this McDougal kid, Murph, who played only in a couple games last year, or three games with the Maryland Terrapins before hurting his shoulder while making a tackle. He had off-season surgery. But tremendous speed, also very physical, comfortable in the man press, can play inside or outside. I think the Jets have high hopes for him. I anticipate him playing a major role here early on in the 2014 season. And then you go right there to the fourth round with a pair of receivers. The Jets finally addressed the receiver position in the fourth round. And Jalen Saunders and Shaq Evans, I think, could play big roles for this offense because, so I'll start with Saunders first, Murph. I think he's going to be the team's primary punt returner. Lightning fast, I think you'll find some ways, game plan specific, to get him out in space because he's a Jet. I watched him out there at camp today, and he can straight out fly. And Shaq Evans, you're looking across from Eric Decker, who's going to be that number two receiver. And Shaq Evans did some nice things at UCLA, and I think he might challenge for that number two receiver spot.
You know, Eric, when I mean, last year is in the past, and you do look, back at last year, and the two Bills-Jets games, I feel like The September game, week three, you saw the worst of the Buffalo Bills, and maybe in the November game up here in Orchard Park, you saw the worst of the New York Jets. It certainly did look like a split if you watch those two games, like it should have been a split.
It was unbelievable, the differences in those games, Murph. The Jets down the stretch, they were thinking, hey, we're in this thing. We could be a playoff team, 5-4. Heading into that bye, and I remember a lot of people in New York, anyway, the tabloids had fun with the Jets going to Dave and Buster's the Saturday night before they played the Bills, but they just laid that goose egg. And you saw the worst of the Jets there, a post-bye malaise, and that started out in Buffalo, and then it carried on in the following week in Baltimore, and that offense just couldn't do anything. And Geno Smith was struggling mightily. But then they turn it around at the end of the season, and vice versa. You looked at a Bills team, and you were like, wow. I mean, that's the way you thought the Bills were going to play throughout the season, too, because they got that pressure with defense. Jarius Burns is no longer there. I remember he had a big game that day,
yeah.
And E.J. Manuel was throwing that ball through that tough Buffalo wind, as we both know.
Yeah. Well, it's always interesting. These are some of my favorite games, Bills and Jets. Should be again this year with the addition of these draft picks. Eric, thank you very much for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it. We appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure, Murph, and I appreciate being on every time.
Thanks. Eric Allen is senior producer and team insider for NewYorkJets.com, talking about their big haul in the draft. 12 draft picks, including Calvin Pryor in the first round, the safety from Louisville. Jason Morrow, the tight end from Texas Tech, in the second round. And they were 8-8 last year. They had, they split with the Bills. They were 8-8, though, a couple of games better than Buffalo. It's going to be interesting again when the Bills and the Jets hook up this season. The Bills will play at the Jets right before their bye, 8 games in, Sunday, October 26th. And then 4 weeks later, Sunday, November 23rd, the Jets are here to play the Buffalo Bills. We'll take a break, come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks to Eric Allen again from NewYorkJets.com, their insider, senior reporter. He always does a great job of keeping us abreast of what's going on in New York with the Jets. Next week, we'll touch bases with folks from New England and from the Dolphins and get a sense of what their draft looked like and how they look going forward. Got a few minutes left here on the show. Let's squeeze in a call. Jonah in Cranberry Lake. Good evening, Jonah.
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I was wondering where you think Sammy Watkins' potential ranks compared to when A.J. Green and Julio Jones came out of college a few years ago.
I haven't seen him on the field yet here. I'm looking forward to doing that tomorrow at the rookie camp, but I think he's right there with A.J. Green and Julio Jones. That, in fact, is what Jim Monas, the Bills' director of player personnel, said 2 weeks before the draft, that's what they considered him to be, that type of receiver, that type of game-breaking receiver. He's got good size. We've talked about him a lot over the last week now. He's got, I think, a sturdiness about him, a strong running style after the catch, which is going to serve him well. I really look forward to seeing. Now, tomorrow's going to be, not really football, I'm anticipating, because they only have 30 players, and they're going to be doing, I would think, for the most part, individual-type drills, no real football work. I don't anticipate there'll be any sort of anything resembling a scrimmage tomorrow, but just the chance to watch Sammy Watkins in a Bills practice uniform catching passes and going downfield, maybe some one-on-one drills with defensive backs. I look forward to seeing that tomorrow. We'll have the video highlights of the workout tomorrow up, probably early evening, maybe late afternoon at BuffaloBills.com. We'll do a Bills roundup and show you the highlights of whatever goes on the field there tomorrow. But 30 players getting set for the rookie minicamp. It's tomorrow at 2:30, Sunday at 2:30, and then again on Monday morning. The Bills draft picks will be there. Ross Cockrell, the fourth rounder, will be there. All of them should be there. Chantrell Henderson, the offensive lineman in the seventh round. Randell Johnson, the linebacker who was drafted in the seventh round. Cyrus Kwanjo, the second round draft pick, will be on the field. I think they're all going to be there. Sammy Watkins, And so we look forward to that. We look forward to seeing him in action tomorrow for the Bills rookie camp. It starts on Saturday. The Bills announcing today they have invited four players to the rookie mini camp on a tryout basis. Looking to see what they have. Among them, a quarterback who got some attention because he played a lot for the Buckeyes last year. Kenny Guyton, 6'3", 208-pounder from Ohio State, in this weekend for a tryout as part of the rookie camp. Quite frankly, they needed an arm in the rookie camp. Guyton played a lot last year for the Buckeyes when Braxton Miller was hurt and had some good games on the road against Cal, 21-32, 276 yards, four touchdown passes. Also invited into on a tryout basis, wide receivers Fred Lee from University at Buffalo, wide receiver Ivan McCartney of West Virginia, and wide receiver Caleb Holly from East Central College in Oklahoma. And a roster move for the Bills today. They released wide receiver Brandon Kaufman, good guy, friend of our show. He is released today. Signed by the Bills as an undrafted free agent in last offseason, released before the start of the season after having a really good preseason. Came back on the practice squad in December. Spent this offseason, he detailed it for us on the show a couple of weeks ago, getting ready to play tight end. And today the Bills informed him that he has been released. Tough break for him. Brandon Kaufman, we wish him well. A pretty talented athlete in his collegiate career out west at Eastern Washington. And we'll see if he can hook on with somebody else now in the NFL. That's going to do it for us tonight. We want to thank you very much for listening. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Tom Reitz is our engineer, Jay Harris the producer, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. We are back on Monday night at 7 o'clock with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.